Hello, and welcome to this sixth episode of Season 5 of The Dark Money Files, in which we shine a light into a murky world. I am Ray Blake, and with me is my co-host, friend, and business partner, Graham Barrow. Hello, Graham.
Hello, Ray.
Now, Graham, we had been planning to look this time at unexplained wealth orders, hadn't we?
Yes, Ray, but we've decided that can wait, and that while the topic is still fresh, we'll have a look at the proposed reforms to Companies House, because while I think we all know the essence of what's proposed, there are 97 pages in the document outlining these proposals, and there are some intriguing details that perhaps haven't yet been fully or even partly explored by commentators and the media.
Well, that sounds like the sort of thing we like to dive into, doesn't it?
My thoughts exactly.
So where should we start, Graham?
I think it's worth briefly, Ray, recapping on the backstory here.
Okay, then. Well, dissatisfaction with the way Companies House operates as a register is not new. We've explained in past episodes that because of its statutory mandate, it has not been able to apply very much in the way of due diligence to registrations, but merely to record and publish what it is told.
And we've all seen some of the frankly bizarre and really quite ridiculous information it has had to put on the register, such as two-year-old directors and ineligible companies being allowed to be listed as PSCs.
For many years, there has been an awareness in anti-financial crime circles that UK entities, limited companies, limited partnerships and limited liability partnerships are the primary tools for international networks laundering money on an industrial scale.
Yeah, because they give the air of respectability and transparency, but exploit the weaknesses in the registration system to conceal ownership and control.
So recently, and in legislative terms, recently can go back a year or three, the clamour for change has reached the attention of Parliament, and a consultation was commissioned on reform of Companies House.
In May of 2019, that consultation was launched and it closed in August of the same year.
The consultation centred on the implementation of four main themes. These were, number one, knowing who's setting up, managing and controlling companies.
Number two was improving the accuracy and usability of data.
Number three, protecting personal information.
And number four, improving the detection of possible criminal behaviour involving ensuring compliance, sharing intelligence, and other measures to deter abuse of corporate entities.
Fast forward to August of 2019, and the government had received 1,320 responses to the consultation.
And I've got to say, that's really quite a lot for a consultation. And it included ours, Ray.
Of course it did, Graham. So over a year ago, the government had floated some proposals, gained quite a bit of feedback they described as broadly supportive, and in the normal course of events would fairly quickly move to respond with refined proposals.
That's how it usually goes, but here there was a bit of a lag.
Caused, I would imagine, by a certain amount of constitutional shenanigans around that time, followed by a general election and then a global pandemic.
Yeah, I dare say some or all of those may have had an impact, right? Yeah.
And then we were taken by surprise, rather, to see a government press release on a Friday announcing the government's plans to legislate to introduce Companies House reforms.
And then 2 days later on Sunday came the FinCEN file stories release, and the received opinion is that these two releases might just have been connected.
Yeah, although we can't rule out a complete coincidence.
Well, no, but the US announcement of FinCEN reforms a day earlier kind of strengthens the case for a causal link, I'd say.
So, enough background. Let's look at the meat of the government's legislative plans. When can we expect these to be brought in?
Now, here's the first catch, Ray. A slot in the legislative timetable has yet to be identified.
Do we have even an aspirational timescale?
Not as far as I can discern or has been disclosed, Ray, no.
You said the first catch, Graham.
Yes, I did. There's another big barrier to clear as well, related to funding.
Say more.
Well, the whole thing is subject to the resources being made available. To quote from the proposal, quote, subject to funding being agreed in the forthcoming spending review.
And that is a spending review that I imagine will constitute quite a dust-up between competing priorities, many of them both important and urgent. But let's assume the government can agree appropriate funding and find time to pass an Act of Parliament. What do they have in store for us?
Well, they're going to want to tread a careful line between cracking down on abuses and preserving the attractiveness of the UK as a jurisdiction to establish a business in.
And we might come back a bit later to what the UK might gain from being an attractive place to incorporate, because there is a big caveat there, isn't there?
Yes, let's come back to that.
So, I want to set up a UK business, Graham. When I come to register it at Companies House at some point in the future, at an as yet undetermined time, how will that process have changed?
First of all, you might choose to do this yourself, or you might go through an agent.
A company formation agent, Graham.
Exactly, Ray, and these agents already act in a large chunk of the Companies House registration traffic.
But now, or rather at an undisclosed time in the future, those agents will have to be registered, right?
That's the proposal for the new regime, Ray, yes. Agents will need to maintain accounts. It will mean that only agents covered by UK AML regulations will be able to, although overseas agents with regulation deemed equivalent will also be admitted.
So the current informality around acting on behalf of others in registrations should disappear.
Yes, it should.
So how will rogue agents who somehow become registered be identified and thrown out?
Well, the proposals note the scope for third parties to be used to try and conceal genuine identity.
How would that work?
Because an agent submitting would themselves verify identities rather than Companies House doing so directly. It's like a financial institution relying on an intermediary to perform identification and verification.
Sure, sure. And in a similar way, there will be protections, won't there?
Yes, the government make clear that these agents will be regulated and supervised for AML and open to sanction accordingly if they misbehave.
It's not foolproof, is it, though? I mean, the last 30 years of financial services regulation have not eliminated all financial crime.
A fair point, but the direction of travel is laudable.
So, let's put the agents to one side and imagine I'm going to take care of my own registration. What will be different then from now?
Well, right now you just have to complete information on the form and have Companies House take your word for it. In the future, you'll have to provide verification for the data you give them, probably an electronic form of verification.
And that alone, Graham, seems like a major step in the right direction to me.
I agree, Ray. However, if you've verified as a director a corporate entity in a secrecy jurisdiction, I'm not sure this takes us further than now in terms of transparency of control.
That's a good point. And let's not forget, I might have used the names and legitimate identity verification of a paid proxy to conceal my own involvement. I'm not sure there are practical ways to ever eliminate that.
Indeed, Ray.
But that's the control side of things. What about ownership? At the moment, I have to declare one or more PSCs, persons with significant control, or I have to give a reason why I'm not declaring a PSC.
Yes, and let's look first at the situation when you're declaring one or more PSCs.
Okay, so presumably their identity will need to be verified as well, right?
Yes.
So a situation we see daily is a UK LLP, say, whose officers are corporate entities in secrecy jurisdictions and whose named PSCs are in an entirely different country again, often China or a former Soviet state. And these are the ones we tend to worry most about.
Yes, they are. The difference in future, insofar as there is a difference, is that the identity of the entities in the Marshall Islands, say, and of the Ukrainian chap listed as the PSC, will be verified.
But that won't help pierce the secrecy of those entities, will it?
No, but the PSC verification will help to prevent the situation that often presents currently, where the named PSC has just no idea that they actually own a UK company.
Although, I guess our bad guys can still co-opt a friendly chap who will hand over his passport when asked nicely.
Well, yes. It is hard to protect fully against that.
Not all PSCs are individuals, though, are they? You can name a corporate entity as a PSC.
You can, and you'll still be able to, but there will be a way to enforce the rules for that in the future.
You mean the rule about the PSC company needing to be listed on a recognised and equivalent stock exchange?
Exactly. We see this rule flouted all the time on a frankly huge scale. New registrations won't be able to get away with that, at least.
Mind you, as we know, there are also a whole bunch of PSCs listed on Companies House at the moment who don't meet the existing rules for different reasons.
Like being incorporated in a jurisdiction that doesn't allow the same level of transparency.
Well, exactly.
Which brings us to the issue of existing incorporations. It's all very well applying these new rules to new incorporations, but what about those already on the register?
Yeah. Is there a measure to address historical registrations as well?
There is. The review talks about transitional arrangements.
And as I read it, while they're not set in stone, it looks like the idea is to bring existing entities in line with the new requirements, as and when they meet their deadlines for filing the annual confirmation statement.
Alongside sanctions for those who do not.
All of which makes sense. Although we ought to point out that there are sanctions currently available to use against entities that fail to make a proper PSC statement, but there's no sign of them ever being used.
I agree, and unless I missed it, the proposal does not address the situation where a company asserts it doesn't have a PSC, or it does but hasn't identified them yet.
One to watch. Anything else catch your eye, Graham?
There was a couple of things, actually, Ray. One was they're going to bring forward signature suppression on filings, and they're going to move to IXBRL filings for accounts. In our, albeit very particular and specialised world, that's a bit of a shame.
Well, for a firm who've made at least some of their reputation off the back of a certain person's signature on Companies House records, yes, I can see that. What's your beef with electronic account filings?
It's subtle, Ray, but one of the advantages that Companies House give us when they scan from paper filings is the ability to monitor the date the paperwork was filed and the order in which the filings were scanned, because each one of them bears a unique daily scan reference number.
So you'd want to see that replicated in a way on the electronic filings that would still allow you to determine when during the day a specific document was filed?
I would. It's been enormously helpful in some of our investigations to be able to track allegedly unconnected entities who consistently file at precisely the same time year after year. It is often the only way to confidently show that the same hand is at work behind each.
Anything else?
Overall, I think the reforms will help enormously in respect of the quality of information for the overwhelming majority of entities listed on the register. Sadly, the weakest link is the fact that overseas third-party agents will still be able to file and verify directors, members, partners and PSCs, provided they are equivalently regulated.
And as we know from our work within the anti-money laundering community, that equivalently regulated concept is not always as equivalent as you might wish.
I agree. So what about you?
Well, again, unless I missed something, I'm sorry that the opportunity wasn't taken to bring general and limited partners into the world of data fields and connected identities. One of the reforms is to use verified identities to connect directors, partners and PSEs so that they all appear on the one presenter account. But that information is not currently collected for limited partnerships.
No, you have to physically read the scanned registration documents, mostly, in order to get that information.
And no requirement for general partners and limited partners to provide anything more than their name, which is often a legal entity in some unknown location.
So there is still wiggle room then.
Yeah, it will be interesting to watch as the reforms are implemented if there's any change on the rate of registrations for different types of entities. Because that's often the best early warning that those with criminal intent have started to find ways around the tougher obligations.
I think that's a great observation, Ray, and one that we will do. So what's that then? All in all, a cautious welcome with a few reservations?
Yeah, probably there is an elephant in the corner of this room that we ought to talk about, Graham, before we shut this down entirely. And of course, that's the whole use of UK facilities by non-UK actors. Now, more often than not in these troublesome companies, what we see is a UK registration without a single officer or PSC or frankly anyone else involved who's actually physically sited in the UK. And that can be an issue, can't it?
Well, it can, and it's something that we've talked about before, Ray, that I can't see the harm in insisting for every UK entity incorporated a requirement to have at least one accountable person actually living here in the UK so that they can be held to account.
And that doesn't seem unreasonable, Graham. After all, no jobs are being created in the UK from these corporations, and presumably no UK taxes being paid. So it seems a small demand, really.
I think you're absolutely right.
So that seems like a good point to wrap up on Companies House, Graham. What's next for us?
I think we go back to our original idea for this episode and record the next one, as we plan to do for this one, on unexplained wealth orders.
I'm looking forward to it.